Hello, and welcome to the 1955 Kahlua Study Series. We are on Chapter 34, Part 2. The Principles Every Infinite Way Student Must Know. Now notice it doesn't say the principles every infinite way student might want to know or should know, or it says must know. And we can see, all of us now, by the time we've arrived here at this chapter, the depth that we have to go to in the infinite way. We had no idea it was this deep, this involved, really this much work, did we? But now here we are, so let's continue. I believe we were on principle number 15, which is a repetition. To him that hath shall be given. What have you in the house? You always have to start from that basis that you already have and letting it flow. This is now, what, fourth, fifth time, sixth time we've had the same principle? Why is this so important that it keeps coming up, that he keeps repeating it, that he keeps writing it down? Because what you practice is what you demonstrate. If you claim that you are Christ, that is, God individualized, the Word made manifest as individual being, how can you walk around as a human being and hoard and take and try to get and achieve and attain and have and hold? You can't. So you have to practice this principle and pour out a blessing. You must live as the Christ. You can't just talk about it any longer, just think about it. You have to find ways to pour out. What do you have in your house that you can give, that you can pour? And what you have in your house, what you should have in your house, is all that the Father has. But you can only prove that principle and demonstrate that you have all that the Father has by continually giving it away. Now that doesn't mean that you give everything you have and go live on the streets as a pauper, as a beggar, going from door to door begging a bowl of rice. That's not what that means. It means in your meditation to have the recognition that you have, to settle back until you feel that presence, your own presence, really, and then let it tell you, nudge you, what to give, what to pour, because it will. And if it isn't, you're not living by this principle, and you're going to demonstrate perfectly that you have not. And so you'll find yourself in the dream of lack. All right, so he says here, the very moment you begin to realize that your oneness with God gives you the fullness of the Godhead bodily and makes you an heir of God, a joint heir with Christ, then it can begin to flow out from you. But the moment you declare, I have not, from that moment you begin to have less than you had before. And that's a spiritual law. You're going to demonstrate what you're practicing. And so if you walk around like you're just a human being and you don't have anything, and you don't have enough, you're going to make the perfect demonstration. Now, you can't walk around pretending. That won't work either. You can't walk around pretending that you're a Rockefeller or a Kennedy or even a bush, you can't walk around pretending. You have to first have the conscious inner feeling that all that the Father has is yours, or you have to receive an impartation from the Father saying that. Then, as you open your eyes and go about your business, you will know how and where to pour. But you've got to live as the Christ if you're ever going to demonstrate the Christ. So we move on to number 16, prayer does not influence God. And that's important. We've already covered it, but it's worth repeating quite often. Because we're so steeped in our conditioning. We have not just been conditioned for 10 or 20 years. Not even 40 or 50. Try 40 or 50 centuries of praying to God so that God will do something. And in all different faiths, it doesn't matter whether you're a Christian or a Catholic with your rosary and saying your Hail Marys, whether you're a Buddhist with a prayer wheel, or a Muslim with a prayer mat, bowing down 5 times a day. It doesn't matter. You've been conditioned to think that your prayers will influence God. The whole of the spiritual life can be summed up in really one word, but we'll say two words. God is. It can really be summed up in one word, is. Or I. Whether you say I am or I, or God is or is, the spiritual life is, ising. And so, in your meditations, in your demonstrations, in your entire experience within and without, you must come to the place where is ising you. And so in that realization, God is that which I am now, there is really no need for prayer, is there? It's just the recognition. How many times did he tell us that? I used to wonder that in the early years. What does he mean, prayer becomes a recognition? Because when I say these things in my mind, that doesn't change anything. Well, that's not the recognition, is it? It's the soul recognition. It goes on within your consciousness when the thinking mind is still. That's where recognition and realization takes place. And so if you're standing in your consciousness, realizing God is, I am, and resting in it without a word, without a thought, without a prayer passing your lips, God is functioning you. Christ is living you. Grace is living you. So no, prayer does not influence God, and we know that. And so onward to 17, another repetition. Demonstration of good is the result of realization. In other words, he says realization is demonstration. And that's just what we just said, isn't it? Without a single prayer, that inner realization will result in demonstration. Here's the way I see it. The great master Moses, who lifted the veil and then put it back on, but he lifted the veil and he had that experience in which he stood in the inner realization, I am that very I am. I am that I am. And then he realized that there was two creations. There was a false creation a mind formation, claiming to be a human being. Moses. Could have been Bill, Bob, Pete, Joe, Mary, Cindy, Lucy, too. But a false formation. The second chapter of Genesis. The Lord God, the mind. And there was a real creation. I am that I am now. The perfect creation. The perfect I am. Ising. And he didn't know how to give this to the people because they were a little bit primitive, if you remember. It was probably you and I. And we were a little bit primitive. So he wanted to preserve it for us. So he wrote it down in the story of Genesis 1 and 2. Now, we have come to the place where we can read his story. What is it, 7,000 years later? Thank you, Moses, for thinking of us back then. 7,000 years later, we're ready to read his stories and get it. And they're telling us we can continue to live in the mind and the mind's formation, the second chapter of Genesis, and we will demonstrate perfectly what the mind is, which is a belief in good and evil. So sometimes we'll have good experiences, sometimes we'll have evil ones, sometimes we'll be healthy, sometimes we'll be sick, sometimes we'll be alive, sometimes we'll be dead. Only to be alive again and dead again, and alive and dead, and alive and dead, and alive. Or, we can step out of that, come within, in this beautiful consciousness, this beautiful realization, recognition, awareness of this I in our midst, of this I that I am, ising. And if we stand still, it functions itself. It flows through into manifestation and appears as every good and perfect gift. So which world do you want to live in? Well, that's the meaning of realization is demonstration. Now we come to a very important principle that we confuse with religion. And that's principle number 18, judge not. He says, this is really important to us. And why? We used to think, well, if we judge bad of somebody, we're doing a bad thing. We need to be loving to our brothers and sisters. That was a moral interpretation. That was the interpretation of good and evil, the interpretation of the mind, which believes in good and evil and then forms that. Always the mind is trying to get you to move from evil to good, and then wham, it slaps evil back on you. It's really, I think it's insane myself, don't you? We can live in insanity or we can be restored, our soul can be restored. Our sanity can be restored in the realization of who we really are. Anyway, judge not has nothing to do with a moral good or bad. You want to judge? Go ahead. There's no God going to strike you down. There's only one little problem. As long as you continue to see the world created by mind, and then to judge it and form conclusions, well, you're locked into the illusion, to the second chapter of Genesis, aren't you? So judge not had nothing to do with now I want you to be good little boys and girls. It had to do with, look, stop seeing the illusion. Judge not, he says, means do not declare anyone good or anyone evil. Do not declare anything good or anything evil. And why not? Only God is. Another reason is because if you judge, you are personalizing. And we've got to learn to live in the impersonal, unconditioned mind, the mind that was in Christ Jesus, the mind which is an avenue of awareness, simply an awareness of that I am ising, manifesting, forming itself. But if you're judging, you're personalizing, you're locked into the belief in good and evil. So we really must learn how to look past anything that can be judged into the invisible. Oh, this reminds me so much of the Cheshire Cat in Alice in Wonderland, or Alice in Through the Looking Glass. You remember that cat? Slowly it faded away, and the last thing to fade was its smile. That's what we're doing. We're doing that consciously. We're fading away and helping that false self to fade away. We train ourselves to look into the invisible, to look past the appearance. We train ourselves to rely on the invisible. We train ourselves to stand in the invisible. We train ourselves to be an instrument for the invisible. We really are turning invisible. But that's where that first kingdom is. It's invisible to this mind that sees good and evil. But in your meditations, as you're lifted up into spiritual consciousness, it's no longer invisible. You can see, you can feel, you can even hear it. So, only God is good. Only God is. Know that truth. Now, number 19, are we seeking God? Or are we seeking something of God? And just knowing from what we've been talking about, why would it not be good to seek something of God? Sure, because if you have God and, you're immediately back in that mind that sees two everywhere. And so the minute you want something from God, you've got God and. And then you're going to demonstrate God and. You're going to demonstrate good and evil. You're going to demonstrate the pairs of opposites. Again, it's not, oh, you're being a bad boy because you want something from God, and you must be a pure soul and want God only for God itself, for the love of God. It has nothing to do with that. We keep mixing up our centuries of religion with the spiritual way of life. It has nothing to do with that. No. You're not a bad person if you're not pure enough to want God alone. That's not what that means. It means you're setting yourself up for failure if you don't want God alone. So the very moment he says that you're looking for home, companionship, supply, employment, transportation, or a vacation, you're seeking amiss. And he says, you see, oh, this is so important. When he says that, my ears really perk up. My inner ear really perks up. Because he means this. Once we have God, we have all there is. Until we have God, we have nothing. To look for supply, companionship, home, spiritually, is an impossibility. There are no such things spiritually. Spiritually, there is only God. This is a hard part to get. It's a hard part to understand, particularly in the beginning, but even in the middle, and probably even towards the end. I don't know if, when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane, was he praying for God alone? Yes, at the end he was, but in the beginning he was saying, if there's some way to let this cup pass from me, that would be good. That's not praying for God alone. But then he went back into his realization, nevertheless, not my will be done, but thy will be done. So this is a hard principle to get, because we have the mind showing us an infinite forms of mental illusion, of good and bad. And so it's so easy to be tempted to ask God for something. I need this. My heart is failing. I need a better heart. I need this. I'm financially bankrupt. I need some finances. I need this. I'm all alone. I need a companion. What we don't see is we're back in religion if we're seeing that way. We're back in the second chapter of Genesis. There's God and. God up there and me down here. We've got to consciously take ourselves from the second chapter of Genesis and walk backwards right into the kingdom of heaven, the first chapter of Genesis. And to do that, we've got to come to this place where we see the only demonstration we ever have to make from now on is God. The inner experience of God. And then it forms itself as our need fulfilled, which is an abundant life. And without directing it, without telling it, without informing it, because of omniscience, it knows exactly what to flow out as. Actually, it flows out as invisible spiritual flesh or spiritual substance. And then the mind, acting as a transparency, forms it as our, or makes it appear as form, as our need fulfilled. So you don't have to tell it. You have to stand on the principle, which is that God is. There is only God. And by attaining God, you attain all that God is. God appearing as form. But to seek one of the forms, well, that's really idolatry, isn't it? In seeking the allness of God, then you'll have those particular facets, faces, or forms of God necessary to your unfoldment. And he says, now nothing could be more important than this point. Are we seeking a realization of God? Or are we thinking of reaching God in order to get over here something that we think we're going to get through God? That is as important as any phase of this work. And I wrote here in the margin, to seek something from God means you don't have it. And that means you will demonstrate perfectly your lack. I don't have. Seeking only God and the experience of God, then all that the Father has, I have. Again, you're demonstrating the principle. If I have to seek something from God, I don't have it. Or, I'm resting in God. God is, which is proof that I have all that God has. Very strange. It's kind of backwards from how the mind thinks of it. All right. God is individual life. God is working out its life as our life. And that right there is a meditation, or 3 or 5 or 10, if I ever saw it. God is working out its life as your life. God is working out its life in what appears to be the form of your life. So relax. Learn to be a beholder. Watch. If you watch, you really will see. It's God's life unfolding as your life. Alright, now this principle coming up here is the secret to eternal life. He's going to mention it twice. Put on your intuitive antenna. Open your inner ear and listen. Enter into this if you can. It's only your life or my life when we take hold of it and try to manipulate it or do something with it or make something of it. Then we've given birth to it, and eventually we're going to give death to it. I just can't believe that. I just couldn't believe that the first time I read that. My God. If I give birth to it, if I've given birth to a personal life, I'm going to give death to a personal life. But as we become beholders of God fulfilling itself on earth, well, there's no more birth or death, is there? Because now it's God manifesting. And there's never a time when God doesn't manifest. And he talks about God incarnate on earth. That's the truth about you and me, when we attain the realization of it. See, that's not the truth about you and me before, when we haven't attained the realization of it, because if we don't have the realization of it, we're standing in the second chapter of Genesis. We're nothing but this miserable mind of duality forming itself over and over. But with the realization, wow, I don't have a personal life. This is God's life. And standing to the side and watching and seeing God, feeling God, live it. We come into the realization by practicing these principles, by pouring out, by demonstrating I have, by being a beholder, by watching God live itself, pour out itself. Then, with that realization of that, what have we done? What have we done? We have destroyed birth and death. You see why Joel can make that statement? No one has ever been born. No one will ever die. That does you no good unless you have the inner realization of this. If you have the inner realization, then it's important to you because you will never be born. You will never die as an experience. And so you will have found your own eternal life. And so following Christ does lead to life everlasting, doesn't it? But not like we thought when we were religious for all those centuries. All right, so the harmony that we experience is in the degree of our knowing that this is God's life and the degree in which we lose concern for it. Of course, you can't come to the realization, you can't stand a little to the side and watch God live itself as your life. You can't have that experience, I live, but not really, I'm standing off to the side as Christ liveth my life. You can't have that inner awareness if you still have concern for a personal life. Don't you see how those two go against each other? And again, this is not religious. You're not going to be a good little person if you are able to totally let go of your life and let God. That's not what that means. No, but you're going to come into the conscious awareness of something other than you, this infinite invisible forming itself as your experience. And when you have the awareness of that, death has been overcome. This world has been overcome. So in proportion as you can have no concern for your life, but learn to be a beholder, you will actually find this isn't your life at all. And never was. This is the life of God, incarnate on earth, individualized on earth. And that's an actual experience that we come into. And by practicing these principles, well, you have everything you need in your lap if you have these transcripts. You have every principle you need to come into this experience. God is individual being. He's going to give this to us again. So listen. This is important. This is the second time. God is individual being. God appears on earth as individual you and me as we step aside, move over just an inch. You'll begin to see God shining through. Otherwise, you've given birth to yourself. And in the end, you will give death to yourself. You'll create yourself, maintain yourself, sustain yourself, and in the end, get rid of yourself. That is just, that's just flabbergasting, really. That's just something. Look at that. Look at that at depth. It just kind of knocks you off your, out of your shoes, really. Oh my God, he's right. In one way or another, we all must come to that place of realization that God is individual life. I can tell you this. There's no other healing principle. It's only that one person attains the realization of God as individual life, and that makes him a healer. God doesn't make him a healer. He is ordained by his realization. There's something there too, huh? God doesn't ordain us, our realization does. Because realization is the experience of Christ. Alright, so all you have to do, according to Joel, is just move over an inch. And you're done. Yeah, right. I must move a micro dot every 2 years. But I tell you, I'm on the way. I'm going to move over an inch. You know, the funny thing is, it can happen in a split second, in the twinkling of an eye, can it? And furthermore, it has to happen in every meditation. And then eventually it has to be the complete transition of your life. But this is just so fascinating. You'll create yourself, maintain yourself, sustain yourself, and in the end get rid of yourself. Ah, yes, the human mind. You know, that's what happened, don't you? If you've ever read Sigmund Freud and his theories of the formation of the id, your personality. It was manufactured. It's not a real entity. Did you know you're not a real entity? You've been dreaming this whole thing. It's not even real. It's not even real. This reminds me of Planet of the Apes and Charlton Heston saying, "It's a madhouse." We're all walking around in this huge insane asylum, you know, with this belief in good and evil all the time, being the Son of God with all that God has. That's just amazing. So, we, after 7,000 years, thanks to Moses, And then the booster shot we got from Jesus, we are now ready to awaken, to move over just an inch, to not create anything, to be what we were made to be, a witness. Stand in the invisible. Watch the invisible flow through as flesh, invisible flesh, and see it appear as form. In other words, be the Christ. Because that's what happened when he multiplied loaves and fishes, isn't it? And that's what has to be our living experience. And for sure, that is pouring out. So, shall we go on to 21? Yes. And 21 was just a writing out of something I gave in a previous one. The principle of giving of first fruits, giving of truth, giving of tithes, giving of love. It is only what you give out that can come back to you. There is no question about that principle, that life is a completeness within us, and as we permit it to flow out, it flows back. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is the sixth or seventh time now he's brought up this principle. And if Spirit keeps bringing it up, it's got to be extremely important. So if you're still standing there saying, I can't pour, I just don't have anything right now, the economy's bad all over. Well, okay, you're not ready to stand an inch to the side, are you? Maybe later. I'm still dreaming. So he says, we have only a right to the bread of life that we place on the waters of life because God has planted in us the completeness of its own being, and that is for us. But we've got to demonstrate it. Each of us individually has got to be an instrument through which the Spirit of God flows out, pours out, gives, loves, and does. Principle number 22, seeking God without a purpose. That, of course, is the extreme of spiritual realization. And he just kind of gave that one a little while ago, didn't he? But so he's going to repeat it. When a person achieves a state of consciousness in which they'd say, God, what difference would it make to me if I had a body or didn't have one? If I were healthy or not? I'm not seeking anything but God. Let me live and move and have my being in God, of God, with God, and I can take all the rest that may be. When consciousness rises to that place of devotion, where God is God to us for God's sake, then we have attained the infinite way. Well, of course. It's what we said before. You can't be trying to demonstrate something and demonstrate God. Because if you're trying to demonstrate something, there's, number one, there's still God and number two, you don't have it. So you're demonstrating lack and limitation. But to want God just for God's sake is the right way to go, because then God will appear as your need fulfilled. In an infinite forms and variety, and therefore it is the infinite way of life. So our prayer must be without thought or desire. The prayer of silence must be practiced. That is a silencing from all desire, all hope, all expectancy, the complete prayer of God realization for God. Of course, if you're not silent, you're demonstrating that you're reaching, you're struggling, trying to attain, trying to demonstrate. And so you're demonstrating separation. But if your prayer is silence, in which you listen, and you become aware of Spirit praying, then you're demonstrating oneness. You're demonstrating an avenue of awareness. You're demonstrating your Christhood. There is no connecting of Spirit to the human scene. Now watch this, he says. Watch this, because in religion they expect God to be a God in mortality. Now, this is real big with him. He doesn't mention it too often because it scares so many people. But this is the principle that started him on his journey, you remember? He says it was World War I, I believe, and he was in Europe, and he was looking at all the ships lined up and ready to start firing at each other. And he turned around and he saw a church almost practically on every street corner. And the question came to him, how can this be? How can this be with so many churches? It was similar to Siddhartha, who became Buddha, when he went and took his trip and looked at a sick person, a diseased person, a dying person, a dead person, a homeless person, poverty. And he said, how can this be? How can this be? That was Joel's thought. How can this be? And the answer came, God is not in the human scene. And that started his search. Well, that was actually a principle. And he gives it to us. There is no connecting of spirit to the human scene. Now, it makes sense, too, when you look at it. It feels right, because how can you connect spirit, Christ, invisible flesh, with a mental image? You can't. How can you connect spirit with a mental image? That's the reason why you're able to dissolve the hypnotism of mental image, is because there's no God in it. And there never will be. Now, that can be a little bit scary as you look around at this entire world and realize, whoa, we're here. This is a dangerous place. There's no God here anywhere. But then you have to correct yourself. And you have to say, wait a minute. The illusion's not out there. God is this world. God's perfect creation is the only world. This mind is lying to me again. This that I'm seeing isn't the world at all. It's a deceptive state of thought. It's hypnotism. And no, God's not in the hypnotism. God's perfect creation, the first chapter of Genesis, is intact. This that I'm seeing is hypnotism, not a world at all. So no, God's not in this world, this hypnotism. But God is in His world, the kingdom. So let me be still now. Step out of, or step over an inch, out of this hypnotism of a false creation. And Father, lift me up into an awareness of Your kingdom. You know, I realized pretty strongly yesterday in one of my meditations. Follow me with this. God is the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is God. Heaven and God are the same, right? We know that. And we say all the time, God is omnipresent. Does that then not tell you the kingdom of heaven is omnipresent? The kingdom of heaven is omnipresent right now. And so right where you stand, you can't get outside of the kingdom of heaven. You're standing or sitting in the kingdom of heaven. That's why the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. You're in the kingdom. This is the kingdom. You've never been outside of it. But you've taken a nap and you've dreamt this other thing now. This hypnotism is appearing to you, trying to get you to believe you're a limited human being in a human scene where God cannot enter. It's not a dream, it's a nightmare. We're back to Planet of the Apes. I don't know why that movie's coming to me. Okay. So you're standing in the kingdom. The kingdom is omnipresent. Meditate on that. Kingdom of heaven. Heaven is omnipresent. So, God is never in the human scene because that's a concept. And any concept... Well, God's not in any concept. That's why concepts have no power. So, why should you think that God will heal you today or tomorrow if God left you unhealed this morning? That's right, God's not in the human scene. So, why would you think that he would suddenly enter the human scene? See how religion has conditioned us? It's all tied together. I've got to be good to get God, and I've got to pray and bring him here, and blah, blah, blah. No. All that has to be let go of. All that. We have to rise up out of all that. That's why it can't be done overnight. But we're doing it, ladies and gentlemen. We're doing it. So, the secret is don't expect God to come to mortality. Give up mortality by opening your consciousness, and you'll be lifted out of mortality into God or spiritual consciousness. Don't try to have God fixing up your humanhood while you yourself are trying to violate it in another way. So, he's telling us here we have to practice our 12 times a day. Make that contact, in which, well, that's how you step aside an inch. Because in your meditation, you drop mortality. You give up mortality. You drop it. You drop the hypnotism. And in the silence, God lifts you into spiritual consciousness, and then you become aware of God living itself. You become aware that God is its spiritual kingdom now. You become aware that God's creation is intact. You become aware you're standing in heaven. This then breaks the hypnotism, and you wake up. So he says, let us not believe, even for a minute, that you bring a spiritual God to material concept. What you do is lift yourself above the material concept into God. And so if you listen to my talk, the other talk I made this week called Overcoming the Current World Crisis, that's exactly what that talk is all about. What you do is lift yourself above the material concept of life into God. Now that talk is 45 minutes or 60 minutes on that principle. So, in your meditation, you lift your patient out of mortality into spirituality by the realization of God as individual being. Now, supposing you heal them, then you've got to say to them, same as the master did, go and sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you. These teachings that the master gave us are spiritual truth. If you once are lifted above mortality into spirituality, go and sin no more. Don't go back to that material state of consciousness. That is what happens to many of our people when they do have wonderful healings through our state of consciousness and then, disregarding it, go right back to their human way of life tomorrow, as if there were no responsibility on them at all. No, they have received the grace of God. We've done that. I've done that. I'm sure you've done that. You go to a practitioner, you ask for help, and you receive it, and then thanks. Thanks a lot. And you don't even think of any spiritual topics. You go back into your life and start living it as a human. And of course, you're going to demonstrate that human life because that's what you're practicing. And then you get in trouble again because it's good and evil. And here comes the bad part. The coin has flipped. Oh my God, you go running back to a practitioner. After a while, you go, wow, wow. I want this on a permanent basis. What do I have to do? And then you're ready for the spiritual life. So all he's saying is you need to go ahead and, I mean, you need to not go back to a human way of life after you've had a healing. So, we're going to stop there. We'll pick up right after Give Up Mortality by Opening Your Consciousness. We'll pick it up there next week. There was a couple other points I wanted to make, and we don't want a 2-hour talk here. So we'll pick it up right here next week. But let me make these other 2 points. One of them is that if you didn't get a chance to listen to a talk I uploaded by Herb Fitch called Soul Energy, it's all about stepping aside that inch and allowing that spirit to manifest itself rather than the mind. And it's really good. And so if you are not a member of the list online and you want to hear that talk, write me an email and I'll send you the link. It's about 2 hours. It's pretty good. And it's called Soul Energy. And it's all about stepping out of the mind and its formations and seeing the soul manifest itself, or spirit manifest itself. It's really good. And the other thing was sort of an axe that I wanted to grind. I haven't been able to find a place to fit it in, so I'm just going to stick it in right here. Down at the bottom here, he says, you've got to say to them the same as the master did. And a little farther down, he says, these teachings that the master gave us. So he says, as master did, as the master. Now, I went to a website the other day, and here's my problem. On this website, and I won't tell you which one it is, but you can probably figure it out. It was a website devoted to Joel Goldsmith. And on this website, I counted 4 or 5 times where they said, the Master Joel. And it just, I tell you, I think he would roll over in his grave. Of course, we know he's not in one. He's eternal. But that's an expression, and you understand what I mean. 5 times. Now, don't you understand? The very last words Joel ever said to anyone, or one of the last words, some of the last words he ever said to anyone, were, I have taken the veil off. Please don't let them put it back on. And now you go to this site, and that's exactly what they're doing, is putting the veil back on. As long as, I mean, he would be some kind of mad, I'm telling you, if he knew that people were calling him Master or the Master. He spent his life pulling this veil off so that we could see the Christ is in all of us. We are one. There's only one Master, and it is this invisible consciousness, which is me, you, all that is. That's the Master. Don't you ever call Joel a Master or the Master. It's not true, and he wouldn't like it. And I want to honor him and leave the veil off. You put the veil on when you personalize this thing and say, well, he was special. He's special. He's the Master. He could heal. He could teach. We can't do those things. And then after a while, you'll have little plastic pictures of the Master Joel, and you'll hang them from your mirror in your car. Burn incense in front of them. And then another 100 years, and we'll be praying to Saint Joel. God, please don't do this, people. He's not a Master. In fact, he's nothing. but the consciousness that came through him, in his teaching, in his healing, in his practice, in his writing, in these Kailua talks, that consciousness is the living Christ. It is the only master. And it is in you, in me, in all of us. And as we step an inch to the side, the real master, the master consciousness, flows through. Okay? Don't put the veil back on and don't allow anybody else to put it back on. I couldn't believe this sight. 5 times, the Master Joel. Just exactly what he asked us not to do. And man, I love this thing so much. And him. For stepping to the side. So we could feel, hear, and see the Master. The Master is Christ. God itself individualized. As you, as me, as him. It's universal. It's not in one location. It's not in one book. It's not in one religion. It's not in one organization. It's not in one man. It's not in one class. It's not in one nation. It's not in one planet. It's not in one dimension. It is all. And it's available to you in the exact same proportion and in greater proportion as it was to Jesus. He said so himself. So, I got that off my chest. I feel a little better. I couldn't believe it when I read that at that Joel Goldsmith site. Anyway, I feel better. I feel the master within, the presence. And we are, I think we have one more talk, which will end chapter 34. And then we'll have 6 left, which will give us a total of 49, I think. And then I will make a summary, and that will be number 50. And that will be the end of these talks. So until next week, I've really, really, I love you guys, all of you. I know most of you who are listening to these talks, and I love you all. I feel as if we've really moved to a higher place together. I'm certain of it. Some of the feedback I've gotten in private notes, letters, emails, tells me that we've grown quite a bit. And it hasn't been easy. I know the struggles you've had. I've had them too. Because we've had to shake off literally centuries after century after century of conditioning, such as the belief that someone could be a master. Okay. Well, any questions? You know, it's not too far off. I'm going to go giving a class. I'm going to meet a lot of you for the first time. I can't wait. Now, I haven't decided exactly where and when yet, but I can feel it. I can feel it in my inner being. It's almost time. And so I'm looking forward to it. Maybe we can have a class where we can all meet in person. That'd be just wonderful. Have a class, get some hugs, go to dinner. That'd be nice. I think we're going to do it. Thank you. Thank you all for your gifts, your love, your support. And let's see if we can't just move a little to the side, an inch to the side, and step out of the mind and its formations and see the spirit and its gifts as God expressing itself. Good night.